mean stupid as in bad. I just meant, you know what, it's fine.
Like most married couples, Dale and Barbara Patterson like to shake things up from time to time. Speaking candidly to reporters from their home, the couple of 12 years says they've been able to keep their relationship spontaneous and interesting by bickering in all sorts of different positions and even different rooms.
There was a while there when our petty nitpicking got pretty predictable. Dale would finish harping on some stupid bullshit first, and before I had time to get a word in, he would just let out a groan, roll over, and fall asleep. Now he really takes his time ripping me a new one over every little thing.
Yeah, we'll just pounce on each other the second we get home from work in the evening, and then just go right back at it in the morning. I mean, sometimes we'll look at each other directly in the eyes when we're having an argument. Other times she turns her back on me and I just scream at her from behind.
The Pattersons say that in the months since they've moved into their home, they've gone at it all over the house, making a point to argue in new and adventurous positions. The couple says they try to spice things up even more by pushing the boundaries as much as possible.
A couple of weeks ago, we were coming home from her parents' place, and she surprised me by giving me a real piece of her mind, right while we were driving.
We're not exactly shy about doing it in public anymore. Dale gets pretty worked up when there are people around who could be watching or listening.
I still can't believe you forgot.
Not now.
Oh, come on.
I said not now.
Oh, what? Don't even.
Don't even what?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
I want to hear a poem. I want to learn something I didn't know. I want to say yes at the end because I'm sick of saying so. I want to hear a poem about who you are and what you think and why you slam. Not a poem about me and my poem because I know who I am. I want to hear a love poem, a sad poem, and I hate my dad poem, a dream poem, and I'm not what I seem poem, and I need poem, and I also bleed poem, and I'm alone poem, and I can't find my home poem. I just want to hear a poem. I want to hear a poem about revolution, about fist raised high and hips twisting in a rumble like a Roomba. I want to follow the footsteps of Che and hear the truth about the day the CIA killed Lumumba. I want to hear a poem about struggle so that when I open my mouth, I can step outside myself. I want to listen to no less than the sounds of protest in the factories where workers sweat and make Air Jordans and Pro Keds. Because if you want to take shots at people, target Phil Knight and Bill Gates, contemplate how they own the products and they got the goods, how they act like they care, but they're just Robin Hoods. And because every second matters, I want to hear long poems and short poems about time and its limits, because it took less than 3 minutes to attack Abner Louima, to frame Assata Shakur and destroy Hiroshima, to kill Eleanor Bumpers and Anthony Baez, to gun down Malcolm with bullets they bought from the feds. I want to hear a poem where ideas kiss similes so deeply that metaphors get jealous. Where the subject matters so much that adjectives start holding pronoun rallies at City Hall. Because I want to hear a poem that attacks the status quo, that attracts the claps of the cats with the fattest flows, that makes the crowd pass the hat and pack my cap with a stack of dough. I want to hear a poem that makes this audience yell, ho! Ho! Because I want to guess your favorite color, then craft rhyme schemes out of thin air. I want to hear a poem about why the statute of limitations for rape is only 5 years. I want to hear a poem. I want to feel a poem. I want to taste a poem. Give me your spot on the mic if you want to waste a poem. I want to hear a poem.
This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
Suspect believed to have been keeping a woman in a wooden box. 41 Action News anchor Patrick Fazio is live in the newsroom this morning with details. Patrick.
Well, Cynthia, police in Sedalia, Missouri just put out this news release saying a woman escaped last night after being locked up since January. The 38-year-old woman called police to say she had broken out of a locked wooden box inside a home in the 800 block of East 15th Street in Sedalia. Now, she told police her boyfriend held her captive for the past 4 months. Police searched the home and did find a large wooden box, and now they're looking for the boyfriend, who police describe as James B. Horn Jr., a 47-year-old white man with dark hair, about 5'11 and 175 pounds. Anyone who has seen Horn or knows the whereabouts of James B. Horn Jr. is urged to call police.
Thank you. one tonight. 47-year-old James Horn Jr. accused of locking his girlfriend inside of a box in the home they shared. On Friday, she made her escape and ran free for the first time in months. Only on 41 Action News, reporter Lexi Suter spoke with the neighbor who helped her and then called 911.
I showed up from work about 6:05. She was already in my house. My son was already on the phone with 911.
This Sedalia woman didn't want us to show her face, but on Thursday evening, she came home to a woman she didn't know hiding in her hallway and begging for help.
She was hysterical, saying she just escaped from a box. Her boyfriend had her locked up in a box.
Released the victim's name, but say she was the girlfriend of 47-year-old James Horn Jr. She escaped when Horn went to the backyard. She told this neighbor it was her only chance that she's had since January.
They were dating since July, and she knew it wasn't going anywhere in January, and she tried to leave, and that's when he put her in a box. She said it was a soundproof box.
This neighbor listened as Sedalia police interviewed the victim on Thursday. She says the victim told police she was locked in the box for 12 hours a day while Horn was at work.
She said it was a plywood box that he had soundproofed it when he put her in there. She said that he would have to screw the door on. So when he would let her out, he had to unscrew. She said there was a hole in the box where he would put a fan so she would get some kind of circulation.
This neighbor calls it a shocking and terrifying situation happening just three houses down.
There's a lot of frightened people around Sedalia. This was a laid-back town. You know, now you don't even know who you're living next door to.
Charges filed today against this man accused of holding his girlfriend against her will for months inside a wooden box. However, police have still not found this Sedalia man. 41 Action News reporter Dia Wall joins us now live from the Pettis County Courthouse with what police found when they went inside. Dia.
Well, Justin, we actually made our way to the home here in the 800 block of East 15th Street. Right now, James Horn Jr. is charged with three felonies: kidnapping, assault, and unlawful use of a weapon. When police served the warrant here at the home, they found a wooden box inside. It was about 100 inches long, roughly 50 inches tall, and roughly 50 inches wide. This according to the probable cause statement that we did get from the county court. Now, we're told that there were sleeping bags and a bucket inside where the woman used the restroom inside that box. The victim says she was forced to help Horn build the box, and she was kept inside when he was away from the home. They say sometimes he even pulled out a long knife or a tire iron to get her to get inside that box. Sedalia police say they've notified law enforcement in surrounding areas as they try to find him.
We are actively looking for him. We are following any leads that we get, any and all leads. We have the Sedalia Police Department, Pettis County Sheriff's Department, Missouri State Highway Patrols actively assisting us in running down every lead we get.
Sedalia police went on to tell me that one of the hurdles they're facing in trying to find James Horn is his lack of ties to the community. Even his neighbors here say they hardly knew the man at all.
Accused of keeping his former girlfriend inside a box is now wanted for her murder. Right now, police believe they surrounded a home with James Horn Jr. inside, but they're not positive he is inside there. There are armed police outside James Horn Jr.'s home on East 15th Street in Sedalia. And here is a live look of SkyTracker over the scene in Sedalia.
Police say that's where Horn held Sandra Sutton hostage inside a box for months before she finally escaped. Sutton and her 17-year-old son were found shot to death this morning inside a home in Clinton, Missouri. We have team coverage on this for you, a crew in Sedalia as well as a crew in Clinton. Let's go back to SkyTracker right now and talk to Captain Greg, who's live over that scene. Captain Greg, what are you seeing right now?
Lindsay, this is a older established neighborhood here in Sedalia on the east side of town. You can see that there is still a police presence here, although when we got here an hour ago, it was more and originally that the police did respond very heavily to this. That presence has backed off some, so we're trying to get a better idea on exactly what's going on down there, but things have at least for now quieted down here just a bit. Lindsay.
Thank you, Captain.
That's what we've heard as well, Captain, from some of our police sources we've talked to, that they're not positive that James Horn Jr. is actually inside his house.
Crows and crows and crows, don't you hold your head high. Someday, baby, you know you got to die. You got to lay down. You got to die. You got to. And I want to buy me a pistol. Want me 40 rounds of ball. She crows in just to see her fall. She got to fall. She got to. She got to fall. She got to. That's the reason I beg crows in. Not to hold that so high. Someday, baby, you know you got to die. You got to lay down in. And I dug a grave with a silver spade. Ain't nobody gonna take my crow's and play. You can't take a place. No, you can't take a. That's the reason I back crow's and. Not to hold it too high. Someday, baby, you know you got to die. You got to lay down. And you know I let her down with a golden chain. In every link I would call my cruising name. Cruising crew. Cruising crew. You know I never miss my water. Till my well went dry. Didn't miss Crow Jane until the day she died. Till the day she. That's the reason I beg Crow Jane not to hold her head too high. Someday, baby, you know you got to die. You got to lay down in. You got to die. You got to. You know I dug a grave 8 feet in the ground. Didn't feel sorry until they let her down. They had to let her down. They had to let her down. That's the reason I beg Crow Jane not to hold her head too high. Someday, baby, you know you got to die. You got to lay down.
Looking at more than one residence over there. Apparently there are a few different abandoned homes in that area that they're looking at, and they're trying to locate James Horn. They believe that he may be inside one of those houses, and from what I'm told, they're not occupied dwellings.
Lieutenant, do investigators think that Mr. Horn is in one of those buildings, or are they just guessing?
They do believe that, and
they believe that, what?
They believe that he may be inside of one of those houses. It's nearby Bothwell Hospital, and that's where Ms. Sutton's vehicle was recovered. And in reviewing surveillance tapes, video from that area, someone got out of that car and walked in the direction of these houses. So it's not too far. Now, the video was not of the quality of which you could ascertain who exactly that might have been that got out of that vehicle and walked away. However, they did see that it was parked, someone got out and walked away towards those houses. And they just feel that he may be inside of one of them.
Departments and Missouri counties tonight on a manhunt for a violent sex offender now suspected in a double murder. Police spent all day searching for 47-year-old James Horn Jr., scouring homes in Sedalia after they say he committed those murders in Clinton. Now, the victims are 46-year-old Sandra Sutton and her son, 17-year-old Zachary. Sandra was Horn's former girlfriend. Less than a month ago, she escaped from his home in Sedalia, where she says he'd been keeping her hostage in a box for months, abusing her physically and sexually. The mother and son were killed 45 minutes away in Clinton, Missouri, where Sandra was hiding from Horn, who police have been searching for since the end of April. We have team coverage tonight from Kansas City, from Clinton, and from Sedalia. And that's where we begin with KNBC9's Peggy Bright, who has covered this case since Sutton escaped from that box. Peggy?
Well, Kelly, the focus almost all day here has been that White House. That is the home that Sutton and Horn shared. The Missouri Highway Patrol's robot and SWAT team moved in here to command the operation to search for Horn. Three vacant buildings searched here on 15th Street to find him, but in the end, no sign of Horn. As it became clear that Horn was not here, we spoke with a woman here who'd watched all day, waiting because she had known Sandra Sutton for years, since Sutton's days in Clinton. Then both of them moved here to Sedalia. Hearing of Sutton's murder compelled Athleen Blevins to come to the scene of the search.
It's just a shame because she was a real sweet lady. I mean, she never tried to hurt anybody. She just stayed to herself and tried to raise her kids. I mean, that's she was a really good mom with her kids.
How do you feel about James Horn right now?
I'd like to get my hands on him. I wish they would hurry up and catch him because it's just a mess. I mean, he should be behind bars for what he's done.
A lot of frustration out here. Now, with this location scratched off the list for police, they begin again to search for James Horn. And this time, as always, they've been waiting for the public's help.
What happened this morning after we received a teletype or call from Clinton PD that there had been a homicide there, there was a car left there. At that point, we wasn't sure who the victim was, the lady that was kept hostage here. At that point, they gave us a vehicle description. We had an very observing officer was driving in the area and found a car matching the description of the car leaving the scene down in Clinton. The car was abandoned. We took the car then and sealed it for possible evidence. At that point, we came over here, surrounded the house immediately. Once we surrounded the house, we called prosecutor to get a search warrant. And during that time, we also, there was other two more abandoned houses. So at that point, to be on the safe side and make sure that we covered all of our bases, we did search the three homes. The Highway Patrol TAC team came in and searched that. Since we consider him, you know, at this point, armed and dangerous, very dangerous individual. And the search turned up nothing. But we do have a crew inside now, our evidence crew, that is processing the main house where he had lived for any kind of evidence from the possible homicide or the homicide that happened this morning.
Search focused right back here on this small white house. It started early this morning, and the scene was just cleared around 4 this afternoon. Investigators believe Horn was here because of finding Sandra Sutton's car about a block away in a hospital parking lot, and someone leaving that car heading in this direction. Sedalia police called in the Missouri Highway Patrol to help, and troopers responded with a robot and SWAT team. Officers and troopers searched the house and other vacant structures in the area, but in the end, there was no sign of James Horn. We spoke to a man who used to work with Horn at Tyson Foods, who told us the fact that Horn is still on the loose is a grave concern to the whole community.
Yeah, definitely, especially for anybody who fits his type or category, you know. I mean, yeah, he's out here and he's already taken two lives. I don't think he wants to go back to prison, and I just imagine that he's going to do something silly or stupid.
Police consider him desperate, too. They say if you see him, you're to call 911 immediately.
Action News investigator Jessica McMaster joining us live from the newsroom now. And Jess, you're finding the list of previous victims continues to grow, huh?
Yeah, it certainly does. When Sandra Sutton escaped from a box, she says that Horn kept her in just a few weeks ago. We told you about two other cases where Horn sexually assaulted an ex-wife and an ex-girlfriend, but we've just learned that there's a fourth woman, another ex-wife, who was previously sexually assaulted by Horn. According to court records, that incident happened in Texas in 1991. The woman never filed a police report, but Horn Jr. did check himself into a mental health facility following that incident. In the report, it's stated by Horn's therapist that he believed if he checked himself in, he could convince the woman to come back to him. He also told his therapist that he had a need to punish those who loved him, to push them away so that he could go to extreme measures to win them back. Now, in 1992, at just 24 years old, Horn Jr. was convicted of kidnapping and raping his ex-girlfriend in Tennessee. Then, just 4 years later, another conviction, this time for entering the attic crawl space of his estranged wife's home in Mississippi, where he abused and then kidnapped her. The FBI found him inside a Kansas City hotel where he was holding a knife to the woman's throat. Now, we are looking into the time Horn served in prison and questioning how someone with such a violent history could ever be released back into the community.
Thank you.
have done some digging into James Horn's past. He's been accused of kidnaping and rape before. KMBC9's Haley Harrison live in Sedalia with what else she found. Haley?
And we are learning more about Horn's violent sexual past, including how in 2011, U.S. attorneys tried to have Horn committed, but a judge denied that request. This followed his release from federal prison. Now, several experts testified at the time that Horn suffered from sexual sadism, a disorder in which someone is aroused by seeing the sexual suffering or humiliation of a victim. A couple of experts even testified and agreed that he suffered from a personality disorder as well. But the judge in this case said that because Horn had good behavior when he was in prison and had taken a anger management course, that that all counted in his favor. He also believed that Horn was maturing during his 15-year stint in federal prison, and then that meant he was maybe less likely to do this kind of thing again.
Seven Sedalia police officers are on extra patrols this holiday weekend as they continue their search for James Horn. Officers continuously drive by Horn's Sedalia home and the Sedalia homes of his family and friends. Police say Horn shot and killed Sandra Sutton and her son Zachary in their family's Clinton home, about 45 miles away from Sedalia, early Thursday morning. The murders led to an 11-hour search by the Missouri Highway Patrol SWAT team in Horn's Sedalia home, where Horn allegedly kept Sandra Sutton in a wooden box for several months. Police say Horn's family has been cooperative throughout their investigation.
Been very cooperative so far. I think they're to the point where they don't want to see him get hurt. Certainly, we don't want to hurt him. So if we resolve this with him being captured and nobody getting injured and let the system take its course.
Sedalia police investigators have very few leads on the whereabouts of James Horn. They say no one is calling their Crime Stopper tip line.
And money's a motivator. You hate to say that, but money's a motivator. And so maybe somebody could, if there's $1,000 out there off the tips hotline, you know, we get somebody dangerous off the street and somebody gets some money.
Police say if you see James Horn, do not approach him. Police want you to call the Sedalia Police Department immediately. They consider him armed and dangerous.
A sucker or something to that effect. Respect I used to never get, cause all I got was upset when niggas used to be like, "Sup?" and try to sweat a nigga like the lip. For no reason at all, I can't recall if niggas rolling C's in my face. Down the hall, I'm kicking it in the back of the school, eating chicken at 3. Wondering why everybody always picking on me. I tried to talk and tell them, chill, I did nothing to deserve this. But when it didn't work, I wasn't scared, just real nervous and unprepared to deal with rapping, no doubt. My pappy never told me how to knock it out, but now in 95, I'm a survivor. A man on my own. I'll fuck around with fat lip, yeah, she get blown. I'm not trying to show no macho is shown, but when it's on, then it's on.
Can't keep running away.
Bye.
in here. Come on. There comes a time in every man's life when he's gotta handle this up on his own. Can't depend on friends to help you in a squeeze, please. They got problems of their own. They'll put the count on seven chicken shits. Don't get to heaven till they make these fears and these fears on. Just to get that back up in high school, I played it cool just so some real shit won't get full blown. Being where I'm from, they let the smoke come quicker than an evil redneck. Kill it to helpless color figure. And as a victim, I am really low key. Feel that the holy self got low. Than me, so I stood up and let my free form form free. Said I'm gonna get something before they knock it out me. I don't sweat it, I let the bullets, it's blowing the breeze. In other words, it's just a breeze.
Zachary Sutton, the teenager killed, lives here in Kansas City. He tells me he thought his son was staying with his grandparents and says he still can't believe his son is dead.
One of the victims of this double shooting this morning, the 17-year-old, was a student at Clinton High School, and here's a statement the high school just sent.
I was with Richard Johnson when his worst fears were confirmed. Watching our live coverage, he saw his son's photo on Channel 9 as we confirmed Zachary Sutton is one of the victims.
I figured he was with his grandparents. I figured he was safe there, supposedly living with his grandparents, and safe with them.
Until seeing our news reports, Johnson didn't realize what kind of danger his ex-girlfriend was in. He's now trying to understand why anyone allowed his son to be in the middle of it all. He wonders if his son was aware of the danger. As we watched today's developments unfold, he kept telling me he was confused and angry. For years, he fought for custody of Zachary. Now he's gone.
It just keeps going through my head as if I had him, he'd still be alive. I cannot get that out of my head.
Love ain't for the faint of heart. Start training, this game is hard and arduous. You're gonna play in the dark like when it rains in a park. You're hardly conscious of the stains and the scars, enabling your partly clouded logic to pay double populous with arrangements of chocolates. Now, you're working yourself out the same as when you strain with the Nautilus. And you're willing to embrace pain, face and sustain negative consequences. Nothing you say when the love is embedded with common sense. Then, do you really regret when you shredded your promises? Now, I tested the waters, kiss and did ripple the bond a bit. Visits, heaven abolished, and this shit kill up my confidence. Is this filling your conscience when distance is an accomplishment? If you miss chicks when I'm around, the phrase let's quit isn't an option. You best fix whatever's wrong and just move on and get on with it. Cause you'll catch bigger fish in the sea if you manage not to drown in it. It's sad but proud or not, most your standards go down a notch. For loneliness drinks at the bar you set too high. Cause it isn't really my time, is it? Shit, I just found the watch. Hearing the bell toll for me twice a day has me fearing my grandfather clock. And I can't die without trying, my hands tied in knots. And then I'll never learn to brave the waves if I stand by the docks. Love is hampered by thought. If you can handle the prospect of death, it's as massive a shock. And the intellect's at the top, smack in the crotch. It's a cancer that rots your soul, tosses demons off of the road. Just use caution and know that love ain't nothing but a lost control. Often we go.
On purpose, brain out of service. Word slurred when you blurt ish. Stuttering, uttering, nonsensical ish. In your verses, feeling like a shirtless, four-breasted woman in the circus. Furtherly trying to gap an unfillable void. Because her parents never transferring that umbilical joy. So girls create a false world of feeling on boys. Exploited guys playing with her heart like her feelings are toys. When you have it, there's nothing like it. You get excited, seeking those who provide it on phones, talking to psychics. Some spirit spend their entire lives trying to fight it. Living in a confusing haze like they grew in the Isaac. It ain't the end of the rain. With a treasure chest and a map, it ain't easily learnable with definitions intact. It can ride your train of thought and demolition your tracks, hitting it bull whipping, you're leaving them slits in your back. But I've been a lucky one, loving parents, loving friends. But I still spend a lot of my life loving sin. But I ain't a genius on it, I can only pretend. Cause overall it's an emotion I cannot comprehend. It's love.
Of addicts pacing and waiting for seconds of satisfaction, where the word itself is only fashion and bits of passion, hand in hand with animalistic orgasmic reaction. And the past isn't felt as a match made in hell, but rather it's held as a ladder they nailed of common mistakes and nice intentions. But when false love retention is simply vice invention, it's only right to mention the fights you get in. Nightly visions of these Tina and Ike revisions. So what's love really got to do with it? From rude women to stool pigeons and soup kitchens, the truth isn't as eloquent, so be intelligent. Getting caught out of your element just for the hell of it's irrelevant. And that word'll fit like a glove if you don't get right. Now live your life for the love or stop.
Traces of love.
Breaking into the golf tournament for just a few minutes as we're following breaking news here in the 41 Action Newsroom. After nearly a month-long search, police have finally found double murder suspect James Horn Jr. Police confirmed they shot and killed him about 11:15 this morning at a wildlife area near the Pettus and the Johnson County, Missouri lines. He is the man suspected of murdering a woman and her son earlier this week. The same woman he's also accused of holding in a box for months earlier this year. As you can see, Sky Tracker is high above the scene there. Ardia Wall is live on the ground. Just talked to the assistant police chief in Clinton, Missouri. That is at the Kern Memorial Wildlife Center in Green Ridge, Missouri. That's just south of Whiteman Air Force Base, about an hour and a half of Kansas City. 41 Action News reporter Dia Wall is live there. Dia, what did you hear from police today? They did say there was a shootout.
Yeah, Amy, that's right. There was a shootout at the home you see right behind me. We're about a half a mile outside of Pettus County, but we are in Johnson County now. The task force got a tip, and that's what led them to come here. We talked to the assistant police chief from Clinton, and he told us how they found Horn just inside.
They encountered Mr. Horn. He was in a closet. He was armed. He refused to surrender. He threatened the search team with a weapon, with a handgun, and he was shot and killed.
Now, I did ask if Horn returned fire, but they are not prepared to say if he did at this time. But as you just heard, there was a shootout at this home just after 11 o'clock this morning. He refused to surrender. He was given that option, but he decided not to. Now, Missouri Conservation actually owns this property. It was unoccupied, but they don't know how long Horn was inside. They do believe he may have been out in some of the wooded areas around here during that time. So we're still working to kind of figure out what all they found. But they said no surprises. It was as you would expect. So it's still an active scene. They're still combing through to see if there's any additional evidence in there that they want to collect and bring out. But just a really sad scene. But they have contacted the Sutton family. They are still in a safe place. They said they will no longer be offering them protection, but they will be supporting them with anything they need at the Clinton Police Department. We're reporting live this morning in Johnson County, this afternoon, actually. Dia Wall, 41 Action News.
And Dia, just a quick question. I do know that several people, they use that wildlife area. So people there in Clinton and Sedalia, so many people, as the police chief said today, have to be very relieved that he has been caught and maybe this case is coming to an end.
Well, Lieutenant Lynch said everyone has been contacted. They even contacted authorities down in Mississippi to let them know that Horn had indeed been found and killed. He actually did not speak with the Sutton family personally, but I mean, as you can imagine, it must be a big sigh of relief for them to know that they are safe and sound, and that James Horn is going to be off the streets moving forward. He also told us that the FBI did help in the form of giving them some information to kind of work with, not to mention the marshals. So we're just still trying to piece together all the information that we've gathered and bring it to you. We'll be back in another live report straight ahead.
Dia Wall, thanks so much. Live there on the scene in Clinton, Missouri. To give you an idea again where this is, it's all taking place in Missouri at the Kern Memorial Wildlife Center. That is about an hour and a half southeast of Kansas City.
Be a dream. glistening gleams. Baby, you'd be better off waiting till the drug wears off. Swimming in the steady tide. Meet me on the other side. All the words you swallowed up. See you come around for a circle. Ain't no biggie, jump the hurdle.
I want you to imagine what a breakthrough this was for women who were victims of violence in the 1980s. They would come into the emergency room, what the police would call a lover's quarrel, and I would see a woman who was beaten. I would see a broken nose and a fractured wrist and swollen eyes. And as activists, we would take our Polaroid camera. We would take her picture, we would wait 90 seconds, and we would give her the photograph. And she would then have the evidence she needed to go to court. We were making what was invisible visible. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've been part of a social movement that has been working on ending violence against women and children. And for all those years, I've had an absolutely passionate and sometimes not popular belief that this violence is not inevitable, that it is learned, and if it's learned, it can be unlearned and it can be prevented. Why do I believe this? Because it's true. It is absolutely true. Between 1993 and 2010, domestic violence among adult women in the United States has gone down by 64%. And that is great news. 64%. Now, how did we get there? Our eyes were wide open. 30 years ago, women were beaten, they were stalked, they were raped, and no one talked about it. There was no justice. And as an activist, that was not good enough. And so step one on this journey is we organized, and we created this extraordinary underground network of amazing women who opened shelters, and if they didn't open a shelter, they opened their home so that women and children could be safe. And you know what else we did? We had bake sales, we had car washes, and we did everything we could do to fundraise. And then at one point we said, you know, it's time that we went to the federal government and asked them to pay for these extraordinary services that are saving people's lives, right? And so, step number two, we knew we needed to change the laws. And so we went to Washington and we lobbied for the first piece of legislation. And I remember walking through the halls of the U.S. Capitol, and I was in my 30s, and my life had purpose. And I couldn't imagine that anybody would ever challenge this important piece of legislation. I was probably 30 and naive. But I heard about a congressman who had a very, very different point of view. Do you know what he called this important piece of legislation? He called it the Take the Fun Out of Marriage Act. The Take the Fun Out of Marriage Act, ladies and gentlemen, that was in 1984 in the United States, and I wish I had Twitter. 10 years later, after lots of hard work, we finally passed the Violence Against Women Act, which is a life-changing act that has saved so many lives. Thank you. I was proud to be part of that work, and it changed the laws, and it put millions of dollars into local communities, and you know what else it did? It collected data. And I have to tell you, I'm passionate about data. In fact, I am a data nerd. I'm sure there are a lot of data nerds. I am a data nerd, and the reason for that is I want to make sure that if we spend a dollar, that the program works. And if it doesn't work, we should change your plan. And I also want to say one other thing. We are not going to solve this problem by building more jails or by even building more shelters. It is about economic empowerment for women. It is about healing kids who are hurt. And it is about prevention with a capital P. And so, step number 3 on this journey. We know if we're going to keep making this progress, we're going to have to turn up the volume, we're going to have to increase the visibility, and we're going to have to engage the public. And so knowing that, we went to the Advertising Council and we asked them to help us build a public education campaign. And we looked around the world to Canada and Australia and Brazil and parts of Africa. And we took this knowledge and we built the first national public education campaign called There's No Excuse for Domestic Violence. Take a look at one of our spots.
Where's dinner?
Well, I thought you'd be home a couple of hours ago, and I put everything away. What is this?
Pizza?
You had just called me. I would have known what...
Dinner ready is a pizza.
Honey, please don't be so loud. Please don't... Let go of me!
Get in the kitchen!
No!
Do you want to see what hurts? That's what hurts! That's what hurts!
Oh, please!
As we were in the process of releasing this campaign, O.J. Simpson was arrested for the murder of his wife and her friend. We learned that he had a long history of domestic violence. The media became fixated. The story of domestic violence went from the back page, but actually from the no page to the front page. Our ads blanketed the airwaves, and women, for the first time, started to tell their stories. Movements are about moments, and we seize this moment. And let me just put this in context. Before 1980, do you have any idea how many articles were in the New York Times on domestic violence? I'll tell you. 158. And in the 2000s, over 7,000. We were obviously making a difference. But we were still missing a critical element. So step 4, we needed to engage men. We couldn't solve this problem with 50% of the population on the sidelines. And I already told you I'm a data nerd. National polling told us that men felt indicted and not invited into this conversation. So we wondered, how can we include men? How can we get men to talk about violence against women and girls? And a male friend of mine pulled me aside and he said, you want men to talk about violence against women and girls, men don't talk. I apologize to the men in the audience, I know you do. But he said, you know what they do? They do talk to their kids. They talk to their kids as parents, as coaches, and that's what we did. We met men where they were at and we built a program. And then we had this one event that stays in my heart forever, where a basketball coach was talking to a room filled with male athletes and men from all walks of life. And he was talking about the importance of coaching boys into men and changing the culture of the locker room and giving men the tools to have healthy relationships. And all of a sudden, he looked at the back of the room and he saw his daughter And he called out his daughter's name, Michaela, and he said, Michaela, come up here. And she's 9 years old, and she was kind of shy, and she got up there, and he said, sit down next to me. She sat right down next to him, gave her this big hug, and he said, people ask me why I do this work. I do this work because I'm her dad, and I don't want anyone ever to hurt her. And as a parent, I get it. I get it. Knowing that there are so many sexual assaults on college campuses that are so widespread and so underreported, we've done a lot for adult women. We've got to do a better job for our kids. We just do. We have to. We've come a long way since the days of the Polaroid. Technology has been our friend. The mobile phone is a global game changer for the empowerment of women. And Facebook and Twitter and Google and YouTube and all the social media helps us organize and tell our story in a powerful way. And so those of you in this audience who've helped build those applications and those platforms as an organizer, I say thank you very much. Really, I clap for you. I'm the daughter of a man who joined one club in his life, the Optimist Club. Can't make that one up. And it is his spirit and his optimism that is in my DNA. I have been doing this work for over 30 years, and I am convinced now more than ever in the capacity of human beings to change. I believe we can bend the arc of human history toward compassion and equality. And I also fundamentally believe and passionately believe that this violence does not have to be part of the human condition. And I ask you, stand with us as we create futures without violence for women and girls and men and boys everywhere. Thank you very much.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Domestic abuse has long been thought to affect some 3 million women in the U.S. each year. But a new study from the National Research Center for Women and Families indicates that rates of domestic abuse have now dropped to zero.
We appreciate everyone's concern, but domestic abuse just isn't the problem we once thought it was.
According to the report, cases previously mistaken for domestic abuse had other perfectly understandable explanations, such as rickety staircases, slippery showers, and poorly placed doorknobs. The research team presented their findings at the National Research Center's semi-annual conference yesterday. The researchers are so confident in their findings that they have denied a grant from the Oregon Department of Social Services to do a follow-up report.
I don't think it's any use going over the same data over and over again. There's no domestic violence. I think everyone should just mind their own business.
Contrary to our preconceptions, most women are very happy. Now, if only we weren't so clumsy.
Now, go find the others.com.
Like, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I only hear what I want to.